Welcome to the Innovation Station, the new podcast from the Innovation Hub of South Yorkshire and Bassallaw ICS. This is your quick roundup of health and care innovation within our region and beyond, where we discuss some of the challenges facing the health and care system and highlight how innovation, technology, and new ideas are transforming and improving services to help address these challenges. The Innovation Hub is a partnership between the Yorkshire and Humber Academic Health Science Network and the South Yorkshire and Bassallaw Integrated Care System. The Innovation Hub works to help the ICS identify unmet needs from across the health and care sector and support the adoption and spread of innovation which can help meet these needs. I'm your host, Ijaz Zahid, Program Director of the Innovation Hub. Today we're joined by Tracy Turner from the Cancer Alliance and Nigel Guest from CAHA, an organization that specializes in the use of behavioral science and nudge theory. And today, Tracy and Nigel are going to be talking about how they're applying this technique to improve screening services in cancer. Well, welcome, Tracy and Nigel. Great to have you in our virtual studios this morning. What we're talking today is behavioral science and nudge theory. It's a very interesting area, has its roots in economics. Could you please introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about your role at the South Yorkshire and Bassallaw Cancer Alliance and at CAHA? Tracy?
So yeah, I'm Tracy Turner. I work within South Yorkshire and Bassallaw Cancer Alliance as Inequalities and Early Diagnosis Project Manager and the overall lead for the Behaviour Science Programme, working with Nigel and the team.
Hi, I'm Nigel Guest. I'm a director at a small consultancy called CAHA. We really specialise in transformation, largely working with public sector organisations. But I guess I've been one of the architects and one of the behavioural science specialists that have been supporting the Cancer Alliance for nearly 2 years now, doing some exciting projects.
Brilliant, brilliant. So our listeners probably have very little idea what behavioural science or nudge theory is. Nigel, it would be really helpful if you could give us an overview of behavioural science.
Yeah, sure. So the one thing that is a given, all of the listeners will have been nudged at some point, probably already today by the time they even listen to this podcast, because it is literally used in many, many sectors in everyday life, but particularly in the kind of advertising industry, retail, etc. And what it is an element really of economics and psychology and the study of human habits and intentions. So we all think that we make decisions and choices in everyday life in a really rational and logical way. Well, the truth is we are predictably irrational. So whilst we might think we use logic when we make decisions, actually there's a whole load of biases that operate in our brains that really influence how we behave on an everyday basis. Retail is probably the place where most people have been nudged, can almost guarantee that. And this will go from things like as you walk into your supermarket, you may see the little baskets with what appear to be special offers. Mm-hmm. Might be, I don't know, 100 tea lights for a pound or something. And you'll pick those, put it in your basket and think, what a bargain. However, what the behavioural scientists know is that that actually puts you in this psychological almost frame of mind that you're going to buy things. So immediately as you walk into the store, you're kind of looking for other items that you're going to put into your basket and buy. And then the products that they particularly want to push to you will probably be placed at eye level. Mm-hmm. And they know that you'll pick more of those products, which is why they always put premium brands. They do very well out of these techniques. It is literally everywhere. It's clever. It's quite subtle. And it is worth saying at this point, ethically, what we're doing in our work in the Cancer Alliance in no way is trying to coerce or force people down a particular route. Really what we're trying to do is influence behaviours that will provide a positive outcome for people, getting people to go and get their cancer screening or go and seek some advice rather than just sitting on symptoms.
Great, thank you. That's a really great, some great examples there from retail. It seems like, you know, in healthcare, there's a lot of nudge theory applied across the world. Are there any other examples from healthcare that you've come across, Nigel?
Yeah, there's a lot of examples from public services in the widest sense. And I think around the world, it's kind of been tried in healthcare in various levels, as you can imagine. Things like public health have really tried to harness the power of nudge theory. So some great examples would be really topical at the moment, pretty much worldwide, would be things like vaccination uptake, which we've seen through COVID. And, you know, we've all sat through the briefings on TV from various government ministers. Actually, all of those briefings were peppered with elements of nudge theory just to try and nudge the behaviours of the population and particularly increase things like vaccination or social distancing, for example. There was a great example over in Bangladesh that some academics tried to increase hand washing for children in primary schools. Disease transmission and health problems in school children was actually quite a problem. So they just created some visual nudges. They painted green pathways from the toilets to an improvised hand washing station, which was just literally like a water barrel. Some funky yellow footprints painted on this green pathway. Pre this intervention, they measured what the level of hand washing was with children in school, and it was only 4%. Within a day of implementing this really simple kind of visual nudge, hand washing went up to 68%. They measured hand washing both at 2 weeks after implementing these nudges and then at 6 weeks. And it had actually increased even further. And they were at 74% of children washing their hands after 6 weeks, just through painting a path on the floor and some funky footprints and hands. And it was just a natural thing for these children to follow this path and go and wash the hands. And the results were amazing.
Brilliant, brilliant. That's really a fantastic idea. So Tracy, I'd like to bring you in here. Tracy, could you tell us a bit about the behavioral science program at the ICS Cancer Alliance in South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw?
So within South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw, just like national areas, we have real challenge around our cancer screening programs, our cervical, breast and bowel, and we have real variance within our population groups, within communities and within specific practices where coverage or attendance is a lot lower than what the target is, which is 80%. So what we wanted to do is use the behaviour science theory, apply nudge interventions in a practical, equal way for all our practices to be able to use within our communities to encourage attendance and nudge them underrepresented population groups to attend. We focused on the three cancer programmes initially and then we went into the pandemic. So to support recovery, we actually then focused on cervical screening as we were coming out through that recovery phase, but it's actually now progressed to breast and bowel screening as well. So right at the beginning, it was real targeted piece of work with Kaha and the team to understand what our community's barriers were, where them communities made the decisions to access services, particularly screening services in the first instance, and how could we use behaviour science theory and develop interventions and assets, resources that are very practical to implement at a practice level to encourage those individuals to attend. We had five trial practices with very, very different demographics to start off with. Our first early adopter practice has been going live now for over a year and has had great impact with their population group. I think the surprise to me is how practical it can be applied. So we have about 12 interventions across the screening programmes and the restoration of cancer services that are now being implemented across primary care settings, voluntary organisations and secondary care cancer services to encourage people to attend cancer screening services. That's very, very different how our Roma population access services compared to our white British population or our even Gypsy traveller population.
Sounds like you really need to get to know the populations quite well as you start to apply some of these nudges. Would you be able to describe one or two of the interventions that have been used in these particular situations?
So we'd already for a number of years through our NHS England colleagues and our clinical commissioning groups been working with particularly primary care on developing really gold standard processes in active follow-up of non-attenders and non-responders. And over the last 5 years, we'd seen some marginal gains in that. But actually what we'd also seen was some of that inequalities was actually widening from very affluent areas, increasing their uptake and coverage or attendance in the cancer screening programmes. But areas that had particular challenge with underrepresented groups, like I've just mentioned, actually that divide was widening. So actually we needed then to look at a different approach. And that's how we commissioned CAHA through the Cancer Alliance to look at that behaviour science approach, to apply a human factor approach. And I think for me, that's been my greatest learning. It's around not only developing that process, but as you say, really getting into the heart and mind of them population groups to develop the interventions with our behaviour science expert group. And I'll lead over to Nigel now to explain some of them nudge interventions.
We use a bit of service improvement in the process. So the first thing we do is we look at the process or the pathway, depending on the context of what we're looking at. But then we kind of flip that a little bit and look at it in a slightly different way. And we create what is normally a fairly linear process map that is really about activities. And what we focus in on are the points where people have choices or decisions to make. Now, that could either be a professional in practice. So this is where the doctor might make a decision, but also where the patient might make a decision. And then what we look for are the optimum points on that process where we think we can get the best gains against the behaviour that we want to improve. So if we look at the screening programmes as our starting point, really the behaviour that we wanted was to increase people attending their screening appointment. So we drew out the process. We came up with 7 points actually on that process, but then settled on really 3 areas where we thought it would have best impact. The first one was non-responder letters. In the process, we make sure that the practices are pulling their non-responder lists every month. Once they've got that, they then send a reminder letter. Now, almost universally, the practices were already sending out letters. So we helped them recraft these letters. And at the heart of it was a golden thread in the message, which we also quite like to do. We quite often call those anchors. Mm-hmm. And in this case, with cervical screening, we knew that 12,000 women a day get tested in the UK and that 94% of results are perfectly normal. So in our mind, we thought, OK, we can use this now as a bit of a consistent golden thread through all the nudges. So in the letters, it will say things like, Dr. Smith has asked me to write to you as you are overdue cervical screening. 12,000 women a day in the UK get tested and 94% of results are perfectly normal. Please ring this number or whatever to book your appointment. So the techniques can be quite simple, but they really, really make a difference. Then the other thing we know is if you layer some nudges together, you tend to get a better impact from that. So the second thing we did is we assumed now that people would have made their appointment to attend. They're either going to attend as planned, they might call the practice and rearrange it for some reason that they either now don't want to go or it's an inconvenient appointment time, or worst case scenario is they're going to just simply not attend. We said, let's nudge them using a reminder SMS message. So practice is great, we already do that, but the language in the text is really, really vanilla. Mm-hmm. Whereas what we did is we just reused our golden thread anchor message. So layering those two things together has worked really, really well. And then the third one, which was a bit more of a stretch for the admin staff, we created some semi-scripted proactive conversations with them. So when they were in contact with patients for other reasons, if they could see on the system that the patient was overdue their screening appointment. Whilst they were speaking to me, they say, oh, I can see from the system you're overdue your screening. Did you know 12,000 women a day get tested, 94% are perfectly normal? Can I book an appointment for you now whilst you're here? So you create that level of commitment. So really, these techniques, when they're laid together, what they do from a psychology perspective is creating what we call a social norm, really positively framing the message alongside a load of other kind of subtle techniques that we'd use, like green borders around letters, which green has this subconscious connotation of go, I need to do this now. The range of improvement is between about 19 and 27% increase in screening coverage.
So let me share an experience to bring that to life. So with our early adopter practice, the sample taker fed back that she'd had a lady that attended and was 11 years out of screening, despite the practice doing active follow-up with this lady. In the exit survey, the lady said she'd had a non-responder letter. She'd rung up for a different appointment at the GP practice. The receptionist had opened that conversation with her, again, given that golden thread, and she had the reminder on the SMS text message. She said, what encouraged me to attend is, oh my goodness, if it's so important to you, it must be important to me. And that brings to real life the difference these real practical, simple interventions are making to our individuals.
Yeah, that's really exciting to hear the impact that this work is making. Are there any particular factors or issues to be aware of when applying these nudges? I mean, are there any ethical issues to consider?
In the very first conversation I had with Nigel, it was that. And as Nigel said, we've really worked through some of the ethical challenges around coercion. This, is, for me, behaviour science net, for me, as I interpret it, is just about framing that choice for that individual, because how we frame that is very, very different if that's somebody that's registered in a practice in Mexborough compared to if they're registered in a practice at Page Hall, for example. So we have to make sure that that message is salient to that population group. So a simple example of that is when we've been working with the Roma population, actually the invite of cervical screening, they don't understand that term, cervical screening. So actually to actually understand the term they know of what cervical screening is actually making that service accessible to them, even though it was always accessible to them. They just didn't know what that term meant. The other thing to add is because we work so closely with the community and community connectors within them areas that are of interest to us, they actually start then having some ownership because it's that co-design, using that theory from Nigel and the team, their expertise. So actually when we get to the point of implementation, it's not just primary care that are implementing the asset, it's them community connectors within them areas as well. And that's been a great learning that we never had it in the project plan to begin with. It's just how it's developed organically at grassroots.
It sounds like now that you've built up these really fantastic relationships within the community, it's really worth expanding the behavioural science work, utilising these networks and relationships. To which services and pathways are you looking to expand behavioural science work?
Yes, so taking the learning, what we learned from phase one, for the cancer screening programmes, it's now been extended to support restoration of cancer services, particularly in pathways that are showing not to recover, as well as other pathways. The pathways that were not recovering as well as others was lung, which is probably no surprise, also head and neck cancers and upper GI cancers. We're also now seeing a real impact on neurology cancers as well. Mm-hmm. With our business intelligence analytical team doing all the data, we can identify areas, as in primary care network areas and practice areas, and specific population groups and the pathways that haven't recovered as well. And phase two is completing trials within them areas. We're working with a health inequalities focus in Doncaster. Mm-hmm. Doncaster has one of the largest UK gypsy and traveller population groups. Mm-hmm. And we have real concerns around how they access services, not only cancer services, but routine mm-hmm. services as well. So we're working with two practices with a real specific focus on health inequalities. One experience we've seen within the Sheffield area, and it was an Age UK independent living coordinator that was supporting a very vulnerable adult. The adult mentioned that he'd been losing weight, etc., maybe needing to use the toilet a little bit more. Coordinator encouraged and nudged them using one of the assets to attend GP practice, and that individual's now being diagnosed with a prostate early diagnosis of cancer. Mm-hmm. So actually we can now see in practical terms the proof of concept mm-hmm. of them interventions that were developed and co-designed with Nigel and Kaha team with the voluntary organisations.
Yeah, and I think Doncaster is a great example of really getting the point across that all of this nudge theory isn't about text messages, letters, posters. It's not all about the written word. The thing that they've really embraced in the trust is the conversational nudges. The area that we're just pushing into is into kind of reception and admin. So obviously quite often receptionists can be that first point of contact for patients mm. going into a hospital. So having some of these techniques in the toolbox, so to speak, will really help them with their kind of day-to-day job, and hopefully it makes a big difference to patients, which is what we're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So across the whole of the cancer spectrum of work in South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw, there's potential to apply nudge theory. Going beyond the cancer work, the fantastic work that you're doing in bringing these changes to cancer services, what other specialisms across South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw healthcare do you feel behavioural science could be applied?
We've got big plans for 2022. So from our learning and working with so many stakeholders and partners, it feels like we've developed a social movement around behaviour science and the theory. And I would say for every stakeholder that we've worked with, always come back and say, we want more. How can we apply behaviour science to this challenge that we've got, whether that's vaccinations? NHS England have come forward, as in the screening immunisation team, wanting to improve childhood vaccinations. It made us start thinking, actually, this is wider than just cancer. So what's been presented to the Cancer Alliance Board, and which is going to be taken forward throughout 2022, is how we develop a behaviour science academy. So behaviour science theory and the practical element of how we apply behaviour science. So we're looking at it from a population lens, not through a disease lens. And that's the very, very exciting element.
So at the moment, it's based around three core modules. Module one will be almost like the 101 in behavioural science theory. Module two then starts to build it into much more practical skills. So obviously, how do you make acquired knowledge into skills that you can apply in practice, which is what will really make the difference. And then module three is all about implementing a trial, measuring the impact of that trial, and then how you might think about scaling that up. That the whole process is designed to be around building those practical skills.
Brilliant.
So yeah, very excited for 2022.
Fantastic. That sounds really exciting. This I can really see behavioral science being applied to so many other areas. The prevention agenda, of course, is massive in the ICS. Thank you both, Nigel and Tracy, for joining us in the studio this morning, the virtual studio. Do you, either of you or both of you, have any final reflections or messages for others that you would like to say before we close?
Please come and join us on the journey. So we'll be doing a call to action to come and join the academy development. So if anybody's listening and would like to take part in the real early stage of the development of that academy across South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw, please, please do get in touch. But thank you for the opportunity to share the great work that we've been doing and share that opportunity of what it's capable of in the future.
Thank you.
I would just say a huge thanks to all the amazing people that we have already worked with across the region. It has been a pleasure to work with some fantastic clinicians and non-clinical staff. And hopefully, as we move forward into 2022, this programme will really make a difference for some of those communities, which is what it's all about for us, I think.
So thank you all for listening. That was a really insightful session. We can really see the benefits that this technique is going to bring to a number of areas across the health and social care sector in South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw. You've been listening to The Innovation Station, the podcast of the South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw Innovation Hub. The Innovation Hub is a partnership between the Yorkshire and Humber Academic Health Science Network and the South Yorkshire and Bassetlaw Integrated Care System. The Innovation Hub works to help the ICS identify unmet needs from across the health and care sector and support the adoption and spread of innovation which can help meet these needs. I'm your host, Ijaz Zahid, Programme Director of the Innovation Hub.